A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
Random House Audio presents Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Force Heretic 2, Refugee, by Sean Williams and Shane Dix. Read for you by Jonathan Davis. The man, who was no longer a man, stood before an alien who was not what it seemed. "Everything is in place," the man said. The alien tasted the air as though sniffing for lies.
"Are you certain?"
"Yes, General," he replied confidently. "The population has been lulled into a false sense of security. Or if not security, then certainly hope that security might one day be possible. Barring the unforeseen, all should proceed according to plan."
"I am pleased,"
the alien said, claws clicking on the floor as it paced restlessly before him. Inwardly, he sighed his relief. Meeting his side of the bargain was literally a matter of life and death. "Does that mean?"
"When you return, and I am completely satisfied that your half of the bargain has been met, then, and only then, will you receive that which you desire."
The alien's tail thumped the ground once. End of discussion. It couldn't have been clearer if it had used words. "Then I shall leave you, General," he said, "with your permission." It looked him over briefly as it concurred.
"You may depart,"
it said in a series of tones too loud for the human ear to endure comfortably, yet possessing such subtlety that few could comprehend it. No human mouth had ever uttered so much as a single word in that tongue. That he spoke it fluently was simply to be expected.
"I shall meet you back here in a matter of days."
"Be assured that I will be waiting,"
the alien said, still pacing the floor.
"And remember, we have what you want."
He bowed, knowing that he could never forget that. As he left the picket ship via the narrow umbilical, his body adapting to freefall with built-in ease, he eagerly anticipated his return to claim what was rightfully his, the triumphant beginning of his new existence. It didn't matter how many lives it cost. He would happily stand by a bonfire of bodies if that's what it took for a chance to warm himself on immortality's fires. With a smile, he set a course for destiny. The Millennium Falcon's exit from hyperspace was anything but graceful. Leia gripped the arms of her co-pilot's chair, glad that Han had finally installed one that accommodated her slight build. Behind her, she could hear C-3PO rattling.
"Oh my!"
the golden droid exclaimed, shifting unsteadily on his feet to try to keep his balance.
"I hope we haven't hit anything."
Han flicked a couple of switches. Then, when that obviously failed, he leaned back in his seat and kicked the base of the console. A few seconds later, their trajectory flattened out.
"Sorry about that, folks," he said to no one in particular. "Normal services have been resumed."
Leia rolled her eyes and glanced back at Tahiri. The young Jedi sat stoically in her seat, her stare fixed at a point outside the cockpit canopy. Throughout the journey, she had remained quiet and unresponsive to any attempts at conversation, her thoughts focused firmly inward. Leia hadn't pressed her. She sensed that some complicated healing process was taking place in the girl, and she was reluctant to disturb it. Nevertheless, there were times when she felt that a more direct approach might be appropriate, especially those times when Tahiri's brooding silences went on for hours at a stretch, never seeming to end. Tahiri's blackout on Galantos had been a startling setback, occurring at a time when Leia had believed that Tahiri could be on the mend. Still, there could be no faulting her reactions when she'd woken up. Without her well-honed Jedi instincts, they might not have reached orbit when they did, or indeed, made contact with the mysterious Rin who had helped them escape. The subspace receiver bleeped. Leia glanced at the scopes and opened the line. Captain Maine's voice issued from the comm speakers.
Falcon, I await your instructions.
Glad you can join us, Salonia, Leia said. Have a nice trip.
As pleasant a stroll as one can expect through hyperspace.
Leia smiled at the captain's remark as she surveyed the planet before them. Bakura was a beautiful blue-green world known for its agricultural and repulsor lift exports. Numerous satellites orbited the planet, and she imagined that it wouldn't be long before someone detected and hailed the Falcon and Pride of Salonia. Assuming that normal procedures were still being followed, all entries into the system were closely monitored. The Bakuran government was constantly alert for another Sea Ruvi invasion. After the first attempt 25 standard years before, four destroyers and cruisers, Intruder, Watchkeeper, Sentinel, and Defender, had been specifically constructed and installed to guard the system. Two of them, Watchkeeper and the Task Force flagship Intruder, had been destroyed when co-opted into service to the New Republic at Salonian Centerpoint. That left only Defender and Sentinel to hold the fort. Stand ready, Salonia, she told Maine. Twin Sun 1, maintain formation unless ordered otherwise.
Understood.
Jaina's voice came briskly from the cockpit of her X-Wing. Han brought the Millennium Falcon around along a broad arc designed to end quite clearly in orbital insertion. Leia wanted no ambiguity that they were on a peaceful mission, despite their military escort. After the Rin's vague hints, she wasn't taking any chances. Finally, the subspace channel crackled and a response came in.
Salonia, this is General Panib of the Bakuran Defense Fleet. Please state your intentions.
Maine ignored the request. We're allies, Captain, looking for a docking vector.
I'm sorry, Salonia, but we're going to need more detail before we can give you one.
General Panib, this is Leia Organa Solo. We have come to your planet on a diplomatic mission. We would have you notified in advance, but communications have been unreliable around here of late. There was some hesitation from the General.
I appreciate what you are saying. There have indeed been problems with the communications networks. Nevertheless, I must insist that you now state your intentions for coming here.
Hey, how about you drop the attitude?
Han responded hotly.
We have something of a situation here at the moment.
What kind of situation? Leia asked.
You're not welcome here.
A new voice crackled over the restricted comlink frequency.
Go steal someone else's ships.
What?
Han exclaimed.
Listen, you.
Wait, Han. Leia cut him off. General Panib, is this person speaking with your authority?
Certainly not.
The general responded, spluttering.
And whoever it is shall be court-martialed as soon as...
You can't court-martial everyone, General.
The intruder mocked. He had distorted his voice to mask his identity.
You can't silence the truth indefinitely.
I must apologize, Princess.
Panib said anxiously.
We are doing our best to find the source of the transmission.
I'm sorry too, Princess.
Came the distorted voice of the intruder.
But I'm afraid that the time has come to find ourselves some new allies.
Uh-oh.
Han said from Leia's side, his eyes scanning the display in front of him. What is it? She asked.
Sentinel's launching bay has just opened, he said, shaking his head ominously.
He pointed at the screen. Issuing from the launching bays of the cruiser Sentinel was a swarm of Sea Ruvi battle droids, coming directly for them.
Whatever it was we came to stop, I think we might be too late.
All X-Wings,
came Jaina's voice over the subspace combat channel.
Lock S-foils in attack position. Clawcraft, arm and target approaching vessels. Battle plan A7. Copy that.
Jag returned on behalf of Twin Sun's Chiss pilots. Leia watched as the formation of fighters split into four groups, two pairs and a triplet. Galactic Alliance and Chiss fighters flying alongside each other with perfect precision.
Please wait!
General Panib urged frantically.
There's been a terrible misunderstanding!
You bet there has, Han said.
One we intend to clear up for you very shortly. More launches, Leia said, registering fighters coming from Defender. A-wings and B-wings this time, not C-Rook.
Falcon, I beseech you not to order your ships to open fire!
All semblance of calm had left the General's voice. Only panic remained.
All these ships comprise a peaceful envoy to ensure your safe passage to orbit.
Han, look at this, Leia said, studying the display before her. It showed one of the Sea Ruby vessels up close. Do those engine housings look familiar to you? Han frowned at the image. What about them? They look an awful lot like ion jets to me. So? Since when did the Sea Rook start using standard engines on their fighters? Han's frown deepened as his instincts conflicted with what Leia was suggesting. The pilots of those ships aren't human, Tahiri said, breaking into the discussion softly. Everyone's heard the stories about the Sea Rook and how awful Entechment is. It's supposed to be agony, right? Leia nodded, still remembering the look on Luke's face when he had been rescued from the mighty Sea Ruby vessel in which he had been held captive years ago. Exposure to the perverted Entechment technology and to the life energy forcibly removed from those taken captive in battle with Bakura had touched him profoundly. Well, these minds aren't suffering, Tahiri said. They're clean.
What are they then? Han asked.
I don't know, Tahiri said. I've never touched minds like these before.
When Leia stretched out her senses, she too could detect no trace of anything malevolent in the approaching fighters. She spoke on the secure subspace comlink to the squadron.
Twin Sons, fall back to flank Salonia and Falcon. You are instructed not to fire unless we are fired upon, understood?
Understood, Falcon.
Han squirmed in his seat but didn't say anything more. Leia shifted uneasily in her seat also. She felt reasonably confident that she was doing the right thing, but she couldn't help feeling nervous at the same time.
Gunner standing by,
announced Captain Main on Salonia as the fighters came within range. Leia held her breath. On the scanner board, she saw the alien fighters break formation and scatter to adopt a defensive wall around the incoming vessels, just as an escort would do. No shots were fired, and they stayed a discreet distance from both Falcon and Salonia. Leia exhaled with a heavy sigh. Han turned to the comm. Panib, who had been frantically trying to attract their attention over the subspace channel, sounded like he was going to sob with relief.
Thank you, Falcon. You won't regret this.
We'll reserve judgment on that until we hear what's going on, Han said.
I understand,
the General responded.
But first, I must once again ask that you state your intentions.
We'd like to set down at Salus Dar, Leia said, and meet with Prime Minister Kundertal.
I'm afraid that won't be possible,
Panib said.
The Prime Minister is unable to meet with anyone at the moment.
Then perhaps we should meet with you, Leia said. Whatever this crisis is, I'm sure we can do something to help you out of it.
Your help would indeed be welcome,
the General said, although he didn't sound overly enthusiastic.
However, Salus Dar is unsafe for you at the moment. Dock with Sentinel, and I shall take a shuttle to meet you within the hour. I'll explain everything then.
Understood, Han said.
Leia noted the look of skepticism on his face.
Just don't try and tell us that the Sea Rook are now the good guys, though, because I can tell you now, we won't believe you.
Not the Sea Rook,
Panib said.
The Poek.
Realization dawned then for Leia, and from Han's face, she could tell it had for him, too. Okay, General, she said. We'll see you within the hour. The comm went dead. The Puek? Tahiri repeated. Weren't they the slaves of the Sea Rook? They were indeed, Leia said. But how?
I guess that's what we're about to learn, Han said, the tension in his posture already easing. In the meantime, let's show these reptoids how to fly.
The first thing Tahiri noticed as she stepped over the threshold into Sentinel was the tension.
The second thing she noticed was the briskness of the salute Princess Leia and Han received as they stepped through the airlock. The guards, dressed in dark green uniforms, fairly jumped to attention like wires snapping taut. A short, stiff-backed man with thinning red hair and a mustache stepped through the lines of Bakuran security guards. "Grell Panib," he said by way of introduction, bowing sharply first to Leia, then Han. The rest of the party, herself, Jaina, C-3PO, Leia's Nogri bodyguards, and a small honor guard from Pride of Salonia, were acknowledged with a curt nod. "Welcome to Bakura."
"It's been a while," Han said dryly.
"Thank you all for..." Panib began, but a commotion from behind the security guards interrupted him. There was the sound of scuffling as someone pushed forward.
"I told you to wait for me to call you."
Not someone, Tahiri thought, her heart suddenly pounding as, through the tangle of people, she glimpsed a reptilian creature bounding toward them. Something. She instantly drew her lightsaber as the memory of her dreams lifted to emphasize her fears.
"Tahiri, Tahiri, Tahiri."
The godlike lizard creature from her dreams beckoned her. She blinked once, twice, to clear her head as her lightsaber crackled in front of her. "A trap!" Jaina shouted. She too withdrew her lightsaber. At the same time, the stormtroopers raised their blasters and the Nogri guard stepped forward to protect the princess.
"No!"
Panib quickly put himself between the reptilian creature and their weapons.
"His intentions are not hostile!"
The alien was a beaked reptile with a long, muscular tail. Its scales were a dull brown, and beneath prominent ridges, its golden eyes danced alarmingly.
"This is Luothan," General Panib said,
clearly unsettled by the visitor's reaction.
"I assure you that..."
A sudden burst of piercing tones from the creature interrupted them. When it was over, Han pretended to clean out his ear.
"Did anyone catch that?"
"I did, sir,"
C-3PO answered, oblivious to the fact that it had been a rhetorical question.
"He says that he is the advanced leader of the Puek Emancipation Movement and that he welcomes us. He refers to us as allies of the free."
"I do apologize for this," Panib said. "The Puek are unaccustomed to advanced protocol, human or otherwise. They've only recently thrown off their shackles and started speaking for themselves, as it were." Leia stepped up to Luothan, wearing a thin, perhaps nervous, smile. "3PO, tell Luothan that we are pleased to meet him," she instructed the protocol droid, "if, indeed, he is a him."
"He assures us that he is," Panib said.
"And there is no need for your droid to act as mediator in your dialogue with him either. He can understand what you're saying perfectly well." Luothan's nostril tongues tasted the air as he followed the exchange. The Puek was smaller than an average Siru, although not by much. But he was still bigger than the average human.
"You bring Jedi Knights."
C-3PO translated Luothan's fluted voice.
"I had hoped to meet one. The lightsaber is a delightful weapon, an elegant blend of life energy and material design. Our divergent technologies become one in such devices."
Leia's cautious attitude became markedly frostier.
"You still use entechment?"
Luothan danced agitatedly on the spot, fluting urgently to C-3PO.
"He assures us that the process is not the same as you remember it,"
the golden droid informed them.
"It has been refined considerably. The Puek come in peace, he says, not war."
Sentinel boasted a large meeting hall on an outer level, with a transparent ceiling that afforded a magnificent viewport to the stars. During combat, steel-creed shields would slide shut over the top for protection, but during more tranquil times, it offered a wonderful view of Bakura. The green-blue world hung like a fat moon above a ring-shaped conference table that floated on a bed of repulsors. There were enough seats for everyone who had entered the hall, but only those who'd be involved in the discussions were invited to sit around the table. Jaina stood directly behind her parents, her hand on the hilt of her lightsaber. Luothan did not have a physique that allowed him to sit on chairs like the others present, so he was sprawled out on an assortment of cushions at his appointed place around the table.
Blaine Harris, the Deputy Prime Minister, is on his way from Salas Dar, Panib said by way of preamble. But we shall begin without him.
I wouldn't say we're a captive audience, Han said, sitting restlessly at Leia's side. But we're prepared to hear you out.
You've come at a very awkward time for us.
I hardly know where to begin.
You could start with entechment, Leia said.
We know that you think it an abomination,
Luothan said through C-3PO.
And I can sympathize with your feelings. My species has been exploited by it for thousands of years. We know it's past evil.
Be that as it may, Han said, but I've seen plenty of slaves point the same weapons at their masters once they'd won their freedom.
I'll admit the temptation was strong,
Luothan said, his beak clicking together at the end of the short phrase.
But perhaps I should tell you the story of how we came to be here. Maybe then you will understand us better. It has been almost 30 years since the Seeruvi Imperium waged war in this section of the galaxy,
he began. Jaina knew the story. Initially courted by Emperor Palpatine, the Seeruvi Imperium had expanded aggressively into Imperial territories, starting with Bakura.
Unfortunately for the Seeruk, that advance had been immediately repelled by the local Imperial government, with the unlikely help of the Rebel Alliance.
In fact,
Luothan said,
our former masters were assessing more than just their tactics in the wake of their defeat.
Seeruvi society was strictly clan-based, he explained, with each clan designated by the color of their scales. The absolute ruler was the Shreef Toot, assisted by the Elders' Council and the Conclave. The Conclave advised the Shreef Toot on spiritual matters, another aspect of life considered very important by the Seeruk. Their belief system taught that the spirit of any Seeru who died away from a consecrated world would be lost forever. It was for that reason that the Seeruk preferred to use combat droids, powered by the entech souls of captives, to fight their enemies, rather than risk their own lives in battle.
Entechment had served our masters well for many centuries. They had never seen any reason to change. The abhorrence with which you greeted the technology came as a complete surprise to them. They had assumed that all cultures would employ the same techniques. That you didn't only underscored the novelty of the technology you did use, that of fusion and ordinary matter. Clearly, the Rebel Alliance beat our former masters for more reasons than different technology, but that was one aspect they could focus on. They had seen Imperial and Rebel Alliance vessels in action above and around Bakura. They knew enough material physics to back-engineer the technology and recreate it in their laboratories. Within 10 standard years, they possessed prototype hybrid vessels that employed your technology for shields and engines, but were directed by Entech minds. With a significantly reduced drain on their life forces, such pilots existed much longer and in less agony than before.
But they were still Entech, Han interrupted.
Yes. The mind of every prototype droid fighter consisted of a soul stolen from the body of a Poek. The fact that their suffering had been lessened was balanced by the fact that they suffered longer. The situation was still undeniably wrong. Into this time, the Kiramak was born.
What is this Kiramak? Leia asked.
It is hard to explain in terms that you might understand. You know that those of the Seeruk with blue scales rule the Seeruvi Imperium, and that the gold scales were our priests. Yellow scales studied the sciences of matter and energy. Those with russet scales were our warriors, while those with green scales were workers. Below them, barely above my own species, were those resulting from a mixed or unsuccessful breeding, the brown scales. That was the world into which the Kiramak was born. It is important you understand this, because the Kiramak should not exist. One of a brood of brown-scale Seeruk, the Kiramak alone possessed color. But it does not just have one color. The Kiramak has all colors. That is what makes it unique among the Sea Rook. That the Kiramak was a sport, a deviant birth, was clear. It had no clear gender, and its size was anomalous. But that was irrelevant. Its birth sent shockwaves through the Sea Rook. They place a great value in spiritual matters, as you know, and such a birth had been prophesied for millennia. The Kiramak, the birth of many colors, would be the one to take the oppressed and make them lords. The Kiramak would make the weak strong. They raised it like a king, with every privilege and opportunity to learn and grow. The Kiramak soon proved to be exceptional in all respects. Strong, intelligent, wise. It argued with the Shreef Toot over the limitations of power. It challenged the Conclave on matters of theology. And it rivaled the Elders' Council when it came to minor points of law. But ultimately, it was the Kiramak's compassion that was its greatest point, as well as the Sea Rook's undoing.
It chose you over them? Leia asked.
The Kiramak was the one who led us to victory over our former masters. It conceived our revolt and consolidated the aftermath. Within a year, Lawek was ours, and the Sea Ruvian Imperium a thing of the past. And now, 5 years on, the Kiramak still guides our destiny.
Impressive, Leia said.
In the wake of our liberation, we have continued research into entechment,
Lawothan said through C-3PO.
We have found ways to nourish the stored minds reclaimed during our revolution. The droid fighters you saw today are piloted by those entech'd in the last days of the Imperium.
Lawothan's triple eyelids blinked in a complicated manner. Although we do continue to offer entechment as a form of military service, there are few who willingly sacrifice their physical lives. There's no way back, of course. Such a decision is not lightly made.
I'm sure it wouldn't be, Leia said as she faced General Paneeb. General Paneeb, have you seen anything to contradict Lawothan's statement that no one has been entech'd against his or her will?
None of us has been intact, if that's what you're getting at, the general said. In fact, there have been no aggressive moves made against us whatsoever. Although... What?
Han prompted, leaning forward slightly in his chair.
The Puek arrived here 2 weeks ago, offering a treaty. Prime Minister Kundertal and the Senate deliberated for days before arriving at the decision to accept the offer. The Prime Minister's announcement caused a few riots.
It's hard to explain to the general population that we haven't sold them out.
I can understand that, Han muttered.
We thought the people were coming around, Paneeb went on. The defense advantages of joining with the Puek are obvious, given the Yuuzhan Vong's gradual drift this way. And we had a lot to be grateful to them for, since they did get rid of the Sea Ruvi threat.
Paneeb fidgeted uneasily.
But there are complications and conditions.
Such as? Leia asked.
Lawothan has mentioned religion. The Puek are like the Sea Rook in that they share some of the same traditions. Kundertal wanted this Kiramak of theirs to come to Bakura to sign the treaty in person, but it wouldn't come unless Bakura was consecrated. You see, it believes, like the rest of the Sea Rook, that if it dies away from one of the sacred worlds, then its soul will be lost forever. And the fact is, assassination isn't out of the question, especially given the volatile temperament of some of the public right now. Toward this end, Kundertal managed to find a compromise. The Kiramak would come to Bakura to perform the consecration in person. The ceremony was planned for 2 days from now. That's where things stood when...
When Prime Minister Kundertal disappeared...
Interrupted a voice from the entrance to the chamber. Jaina's grip on her lightsaber tightened instinctively as she turned to see a tall, aging man in a scarlet robe approach the table.
Deputy Prime Minister Harris, Paneeb said, standing. Thank you for joining us.
I apologize for the delay, he said to Paneeb, but there was a bomb threat at the main spaceport and I had to take a shuttle from Lesser Grace. As you can see, he explained to the rest of the table. We are suffering from a pronounced civil unrest. They have been behind at least 5 disruptions to subspace communications in the last fortnight. Kidnapping Molière Kundertal was an act of suicidal bravado.
What about Kundertal? Han asked.
Any idea where he's being kept?
We'll find out soon enough. Especially now that we have the terrorist leader in our hands.
General Panib was clearly taken aback by this news.
Since when?
She was taken into custody shortly before I left to come here. We have her in a security holding cell, awaiting interrogation.
Is she...
Panib hesitated.
Who we suspected she was?
Melinza Thanas,
Harris answered with a smug smile.
Yes.
The surprise in the room was palpable. Jaina knew the name. Melinza Thanas was the daughter of people her parents and Uncle Luke had met on Bakura the first time they'd visited. When Melinza's parents had died, Luke and Mara had taken her on as a sponsor child, visiting her a couple of times.
Melinza? Leia asked. Are you certain of this?
There's no doubt, Harris stated. She admits it herself.
She admits she kidnapped the Prime Minister?
Panib asked.
Not yet, but it's only a matter of time.
So, what now? Panib asked.
The first thing, General, is to put our house in order. While we look for the Prime Minister, I suggest we end martial law and begin preparations for the consecration. The treaty depends on it. The Prime Minister would not want it delayed for anything. With your permission, I shall convene the Senate and get things moving.
Of course.
The General's relief was obvious.
There's not much time, and a lot to be done.
Luothan spoke up.
We understand that this is a difficult time for you,
C-3PO translated.
And we are grateful for your continued efforts to bring our governments together.
The Poek's beak snapped emphatically.
I will convey my assurances to the Kiramak that all is in order and the ceremony will go ahead as planned.
Thank you, my friend.
Blaine Harris inclined his head in the direction of the Poek ambassador.
And you, of course, he added to Han and Leia, are very welcome to attend also. I'm sure it will be a fascinating glimpse into a culture we've theorized about for many years, but never had the opportunity to see with our own eyes.
We'd be honored, Leia said. The Galactic Federation of Free Alliances will be very interested to observe the ceremony. The freighter came out of nowhere, from hyperspace far too close to Bakura and going into an instant spin. Its drive unit stuttered at random, which wasn't helping the freighter situation, while its subspace was transmitting nothing but static, which to Jag Fell sounded a lot like the buzzing of angry insects.
Flights B and C, stand by.
Jag switched to a commercial channel.
Unidentified freighter, you are infringing upon our space. Change course immediately, or we will be forced to take action.
More static was his only reply. He swung his claw craft away from the Salonia in order to meet the incoming vessel.
Bakura Orbital Control, Jag calmed on local channels. Has anybody given this freighter approval to occupy our orbit?
Negative, Twin One,
came the instant reply.
This flight is unauthorized, but we've certainly seen her before.
You have a registration listed?
Oh yeah, she goes by the name of Jaunty Cavalier and is owned by a Wookiee called Roofer. In fact, I'm surprised to see him return here. He left owing me some credits.
Jaunty Cavalier, Jag tried again. You have 10 seconds to comply with my instructions, or you will be intercepted. Please respond.
Still nothing but crackling over the comm.
Okay, we're going in.
He applied power to his thrusters and brought his claw craft alongside the tumbling freighter. He caught a flash out of the corner of his eye. At that exact moment, a dozen instruments on his console spiked, and he realized that a spray of neutrinos had just washed over him.
I don't like the look of this, he mumbled under his breath.
The words had barely left his lips when the drive units emitted a particularly bright flash, then died completely.
Break off, he called over the comm. All fighters disengage immediately. She's going to...
There was a blinding white flash from behind him. Then something picked up his clawcraft and spun it like a top around all axes. Then the rough ride was over, and the stars reappeared. Jag damped down his spin and checked on the four other starfighters. He was relieved to find them all present, if a little shaken by the experience. All that remained of Jaunty Cavalier was a jagged chunk of wreckage, possibly a section of the forward structural chassis. The rest had been blown to atoms by the drive failure.
Bakura Orbital Control,
he said solemnly into his comm. I think you can kiss your credits goodbye.
Don't write it off just yet, Twin One,
came the voice of Captain Maine.
We registered a launch from Jaunty Cavalier just before the detonation. It looked like a small pod of some kind.
This surprised Jag. An escape pod? Are you sure? I didn't see anything.
I'm positive,
Maine returned.
It was on the opposite side of the ship from you, which was probably why you didn't see it.
Jag sent his claw craft swooping around the growing cloud of wreckage, his engines on maximum burn. The pod appeared on his scope a second later, streaking downward. Its velocity was increasing, but it was no match for a claw craft at full throttle. He decelerated cautiously alongside as it loomed large in his scopes. Jag picked up various low-power transmissions, including just about every navigational beacon for a light month, before finally locking onto a faint voice calling stridently.
Emergency! Someone answer me, please! I'm in need of assistance! Can anyone hear this? I'm in an escape...
This is Colonel Jag Fell calling the occupant of Life Pod. He checked the ident number visible on the stubby cylinder as it rotated into view. 112V, can you hear this?
Yes!
The reply was immediate and drenched with relief. Are there any other survivors there with you?
Just me. The crew is dead. And good riddance to them as far as I'm concerned. Murderous fiends, every one of them.
Jag hesitated. You killed them?
Only in self-defense.
The voice took on a more commanding tone.
Look, are you here to rescue me or ask questions?
I'm trying to ascertain whom I'm rescuing, that's all. And what kind of monster you are, Jag added to himself.
You want to know who I am? I'm Prime Minister Kundertal, that's who. And I'm ordering you to pull me up this instant.
Prime Minister Kundertal was a big, solid man with thinning blonde hair and a pink hue to his skin. He held his age well, overpowering any hint of frailty with bluster and exaggerated gestures. Safely recovered from the escape pod, he was sitting on a bench outside Pride of Salonia's medical bay. Jag and Captain Maine sat with him.
Go on, Prime Minister, Jag encouraged.
What happened next?
They took me aboard their ship and knocked me out. That's what happened next.
Despite his outrage, it was obvious that Kundertal was enjoying relating the tale.
When I woke up, we were in hyperspace. I had no idea where they were taking me. From the little I could glean from the snatches of their conversations, I was to be taken somewhere and interrogated. Then I was to be disposed of. Luckily, though, they hadn't fastened my bindings properly. So, with a bit of effort, I managed to work my hands free.
Did your captors say whom they were working for? Maine asked.
Not in so many words. Whenever they referred to him, it was only ever as the boss, he added darkly.
Well, Maine said, you should be pleased to know that your people made an arrest in your absence. Yesterday, Melinza Thanas was taken into custody and has been charged with conspiracy and disturbing the peace. The Prime Minister retreated into his thoughts, clearly stunned by the news.
So you freed yourself, Jag prompted after a moment.
What then?
Huh?
Kundertal snapped out of his musings with a questioning look in his eyes. Then he said,
Oh, my escape. Well, eventually one of them came back to check on me. I overpowered him without alerting anyone and took his blaster. There were three in the main cabin. They were surprised to see me up and about, as you can imagine. I confined them to a corner as two others arrived from the cockpit, leaving just the pilot in control of the vessel. I demanded to be returned, but was told that nothing could be done until the freighter had come out of its jump. We argued for a few minutes until the Wookiee tried to jump me, and I was forced to fire upon them. I had no choice. If I let them take me, then I was as good as dead. It was either kill or be killed. So, I killed them.
The Millennium Falcon, with Jaina flying as escort, had left orbit barely an hour before the appearance of Jaunty Cavalier, heading planetside for a formal meeting with the Senate. The news of Kundertal's rescue and the destruction of the freighter came as they landed safely at Salas Dar Spaceport.
Tahiri watched over Hans and Leia's shoulders as Jaina climbed out of her starfighter to inspect security before anyone else disembarked. She checked out the docking bay they'd been assigned. Apart from the Falcon and Jaina's X-Wing, it was completely empty, as requested by the princess, and had only the one exit in the far corner. Through the transparent steel door of this exit, Tahiri could make out a small collection of dignitaries and guards. She turned away from the sight of the dignitaries, and as she did so, caught sight of a technician approaching the Millennium Falcon, a long black cable clutched in one hand. He was moving furtively, coming up behind where Jaina and her parents stood. At least Tahiri assumed it was a he. The oversuit that the tech wore was designed to protect its wearer from hostile environments, and as such, was too heavy and bulky to reveal the being's gender or even species. She knew that Han hadn't authorized any maintenance on his ship while they were docked, so she stepped forward to intercept the tech before he could get any closer. "Hey," she called. "You're not supposed to be here." The suited figure hesitated, then changed direction to head toward Tahiri. She stopped in her tracks, the grip on her lightsaber instinctively tightening. "Hold it right there," she warned.
"I bring a message,"
the figure said. The voice issuing from inside his helmet was distorted like a stormtrooper's. Tahiri's brow creased with suspicion. "What kind of message, and who's it for?"
"Han Solo,"
the technician said.
"I need to tell him to be careful. Things here are not as they seem."
"Things rarely are these days," she returned. Her grip on the lightsaber eased slightly. "You're a Rin, aren't you?" The figure seemed slightly taken aback.
"How did you?"
"I met one of you on Galantos," she explained. More confident now, she took another two steps forward. "It was he who suggested we come here, actually. He told us that we She stopped in mid-sentence when the helmet shook.
"Now is not the time,"
the Rin said, glancing around.
"I shall contact you again later. For now, though, please pass on my message to Captain Solo. I must go. You've been allocated quarters should you wish to stay longer than today. I urge you to take them. You'll find what you need there."
Without another word, the Rin turned and left the way he'd come. Tahiri stood watching him. She was finding herself becoming increasingly intrigued by the Rin and their guarded hints.
"Trouble, Tahiri?"
She jumped at Han's voice close to her shoulder. She shook her head, conscious of the security guards watching them closely from the edge of the landing field. Han glowered at the Rin's retreating back.
"It better not be," he said.
"What did he say, anyway?" Tahiri lowered her voice. "That was our contact, the Rin. He said to tell you that things here aren't what they seem."
Han rolled his eyes. "When are they ever?"
Tahiri smiled nervously. "That's just what I said."
"Anything else?"
She repeated what the Rin had told her about accepting an offer of accommodation. Han nodded, casting one final glance at the Rin as if tempted to follow him.
"Okay."
He put an arm about her shoulder and guided her back to where the others stood waiting.
"It's nothing," he called to them. "Let's get on with it."
Jaina was exhausted by the time they returned to their quarters after the first day on Bakura.
"Anyone else feel like we're the odd ones out?" Han asked, collapsing onto a floating couch.
"They're just caught up in their own affairs." As was often the case, Leia's input on the matter was in opposition to her husband's. But to show she wasn't being argumentative, she sat on the couch beside Han and took his hand in hers. "They'll get around to us when they have reason to."
"Perhaps they should be reminded of those reasons," Jaina said, talking over her shoulder as she set up anti-bugging equipment.
In the corner of her eye, she noticed Tahiri moving restlessly through the rooms, as though searching for something, and wondered what the younger Jedi was doing.
"Aha!"
Tahiri stood bolt upright, brandishing a small object in her outstretched hand.
"This is it!"
Jaina and her parents exchanged confused looks.
"This is what?" Jaina asked.
Tahiri brought the thing closer for the others to see.
Jaina leaned in to examine the object and found it to be a metallic capsule no larger than a baby's tooth. "The Rin said we'd find what we needed here," Tahiri said. "This has to be it." "The Rin?" Leia repeated. Han outlined what he had learned about Tahiri's encounter with the Rin on the landing field. Tahiri fiddled with the capsule, turning it over in her hands and picking at a seam around its middle. Nothing happened until she squeezed it between two fingers. Then, one end clicked and there was a brief but intense flash of light. Jaina blinked in surprise, waiting for something else to happen. But nothing did. The capsule was inert again, and no matter how much Tahiri poked at the thing, she couldn't get it to repeat the flash of light. "That can't be right," the young Jedi muttered. "You'd think he'd make sure it worked before leaving it for us."
"Excuse me, Mistress Leia,"
C-3PO said.
"But..."
Han raised a hand to motion him to be quiet.
"Hang on, Goldenrod. We're busy right now trying to figure out how this thing works."
"But, sir, I already know how it works."
All four stopped what they were doing and turned to C-3PO.
"It would seem, sir, that the flash of light contained a compressed message. A holographic page of writing, to be precise. My photoreceptors were able to collect the data and store it in my memory banks."
"A note?" Tahiri asked excitedly. "What does it say?"
"It appears to be written in an obscure given code."
"But can you translate it?" The droid bristled at the very idea he might not be able to.
"Of course. The message reads, Malinza Thanas has information you will need. She is being held in cell 1217 of the Salazar Penitentiary. You can gain access through rear entrance 23 at midnight tonight. The code word is Fringe Dweller. I will try to contact you properly tomorrow."
Jaina committed the details to memory. "Is that all?"
"I'm afraid so, Mistress Jaina."
"It's not much, is it?" Tahiri put in, disappointed. "It's enough for now," Leia said. "I'll go and find out what Malinza has to say as soon as the time is right." Jaina shook her head. "Let me go," she said. "You'll be missed. They'll expect you to stay to investigate the situation with the Puek. If you send me or Dad in your place, they'll wonder why." Jaina crouched behind a stone balustrade on the roof of a warehouse across the road from the penitentiary. She kept herself low to avoid being spotted by the powerful floodlights sweeping the area. Half an hour's careful observation convinced her that it was unlikely she could sneak in unobserved. No, she was going to have to try another way. Slipping out from her hiding space, she crossed the roof of the warehouse and descended a narrow ladder fixed to the far wall. "I am not a covert agent," she told herself. "I am the representative of visiting dignitaries, and the people here are our allies." With a brisk, measured pace, she walked around the corner and into full view of the security droids. A spotlight instantly hit her full in the face, but she didn't break step. The slightest hesitation could destroy the illusion she was trying to create. Two G2RD droids swooped from emplacements in the high ferrocrete wall that was the rear of the prison.
"Halt!"
exclaimed one. She stopped within 3 meters of the rear entrance, radiating patient obedience.
"State your name and purpose here,"
ordered the other, its voice a nasal whine probably designed to irritate. "My name is Jaina Solo," she replied easily. "I'm here to speak with Malinza Thanas." Both droids buzzed as they performed a quick check on her clearance. After a couple of seconds, one of the droids advanced with its stun prod crackling.
"No such visitation has been authorized."
"Please don't threaten me," she said, sending the small droid into a spin with a push from the Force. "I am here to speak with Malinza Thanas." The first droid recovered from its spin and faced her again, this time speaking with a different voice, that of a guard from within the compound, obviously watching through the droid sensors.
"I'm sorry, but we cannot allow visitors without authorization."
"I can't wait all night, you know," she said, brushing the droids easily aside, and taking 3 more paces toward the rear door that the Rin had specified in his message. There she spoke the code word she'd been given. "Fringe Dweller." The door instantly hissed open, lifting sharply up into the ceiling. She strode through into a glowing white corridor that led as straight as a beam of light into the heart of the building. A chorus of buzzing from the droids followed her. A new voice issued from the nearest droid's casing.
You can't expect to just walk in here and see any prisoner you like. Ever heard of protocol?
You ever heard of a diplomatic incident? She shot back. Because that's what you're going to get if I don't get to see Melinza Thanasse. The pause was longer this time, and she sensed the droids backing off slightly.
Please wait where you are.
The voice seemed more cowed than it had been a moment before, and Jaina suspected the guards had been instructed by their superiors to let her through.
An escort will arrive shortly.
No sooner had this been said than four Bakuran security guards came hurrying around the corner, their weapons, she noted, carefully holstered.
Come with us, ordered the one nearest to her.
Her senses finally attuned for any sign of deception, she let herself be shepherded by the four guards deep into the heart of the penitentiary. Finally, they arrived at cell 1217. One of the lead guards keyed a short code into a keypad, then stepped back as the cell door slid open with a dull grinding sound. Inside, on a narrow cot, sat a thin, dark-haired girl of about 15 years. What now? The girl asked.
A visitor,
the first guard said, motioning Jaina to enter. He indicated a green touchpad by the door.
When you're done, just hit the call button.
Kind of late for visitors, isn't it? Melinza said, looking Jaina over suspiciously. Jaina stepped into the brightly lit cell.
My name is Jaina Solo, she said, as the door closed behind her.
Melinza's sharply defined face tilted upward. She studied Jaina for a moment before nodding.
Uncle Luke has spoken about you. He once showed me a hollow of you and Jason when you were little.
I wish we could have met under better circumstances, Jaina said, moving deeper into the small room close to the girl.
You know why I'm here, Melinza said.
You've been charged with kidnapping the Prime Minister, Jaina said.
Actually, the official charge is disturbing the peace and conspiracy.
What are you fighting for? Jaina asked.
That's the strange thing. A week ago, I wasn't fighting at all.
Melinza's defiance dissolved altogether then and became a look of genuine bemusement.
You've no idea what you've just stepped into. I tell you, it's crazy around here.
In what way, Melinza? Jaina leaned in closer to encourage a feeling of trust. The girl chuckled.
That I'd even think about telling you is probably the craziest thing of all, she said, slumping back against the wall.
If anyone here is the enemy, it's you. Jaina frowned but said nothing, sensing that there was no point pushing. It would come or it wouldn't.
About a month ago, I was in charge of a cell of activists, capitalizing on my parents' reputations to get our message heard. There were 16 of us in all. At first, we just organized protests, spread the word, but it's grown much more over time. We call ourselves freedom.
She rolled her eyes.
It's lame, I know, but it gets the point across.
And what point is that?
That we're tired of kowtowing to imperial doctrines. It's time for us to throw off our shackles and govern ourselves.
Imperial? Jaina echoed, confused. It had been almost 30 years since the Imperial presence had been repelled from Bakura.
Not the Empire, Melinza explained.
Of course. You don't call it the New Republic anymore, do you? It's been given a new name ever since it lost its war against the Yuuzhan Vong.
Melinza snorted derisively.
No one wants to be associated with losers, do they? Therefore, your only hope of fighting back was to pretend to be something else.
But Kratch droppings by any other name still stink. Don't you think?
She shook her head and looked away.
If you do beat the Yuuzhan Vong, you'll just chain everyone up like before. And if you lose, you'll drag everyone else down with you.
It's not like that, Jaina said.
No, you'll probably tell me that we'll all die unless we band together to defeat the common enemy. But there's always a common enemy, Jaina. Oppressive regimes don't function without them. The Empire had its rebel alliance, once we had the Siruk, and right now you have the Yuuzhan Vong, Who will it be next time you feel the cracks spreading?
I'll be happy just to reach the next time, Jaina said. So how does kidnapping Kundertal help you then?
He's all for alliance with the Puek.
They'd make viable alternatives to the Galactic Alliance, and give you a fighting chance of defending Bakura against the Yuuzhan Vong attack.
Exactly, Malinza said. That's why it makes no sense for me to have kidnapped Kundertal in the first place.
But you could have ordered it.
No, Malinza cut in firmly. I didn't. Just because I'm young doesn't make me automatically stupid.
You're not stupid, Malinza. Jaina tried to calm her, but the girl didn't seem to hear.
I keep trying to explain that the goal of freedom is simply to kick the New Republic off Bakura. We don't use violence, and we certainly don't kidnap people. Call us idealistic if you want, but we do have principles. The last thing we want to see is the old regime replaced with one equally as bad.
Jaina's mind boggled at the thought of 16 people attempting to take on a galactic civilization. It smacked of either madness or incredible bravery. How did you ever hope to succeed?
Well, there's the thing, Malinza answered with a half-smile. You see, we had some funding from private sources, and with that money, we were able to dig deep into the infrastructure, looking for things that might assist us. Evidence of corruption, brutality, nepotism, and so on. You'd be surprised what we turned up.
Who funded you?
They would consider that private, I'm sure, Malinza said firmly. Especially where you are concerned.
Jaina didn't necessarily believe everything Malinza had said, but she also didn't believe that the girl was the sort to order kidnappings and murders to further her cause. So why do you really think you're in here, then?
We were tracing some financial deal that went through just after the Puek arrived. An awful lot of money went off-world, but we couldn't work out who was behind it or where it was going. It looked like some sort of commercial transaction, and may well have been just that. The fact that the endpoints had been obscured made us wonder.
Jaina stood, glancing at her chronometer. It was well past midnight, and her parents would be starting to get worried. I should go now.
But you haven't told me why you're here yet, Malinza protested.
I'm just doing my job, Jaina said with a smile. You know what Jedi are like. We're always getting in the way.
As well as always getting their way.
The smile was half-heartedly returned. Then it was lost altogether. I have to admit, I would be glad to be out of here. Jaina nodded sympathetically. I'll see what I can do about that.
She palmed the green call button and faced Malinza one last time. Maybe we can apply some pressure to get your hearing processed more quickly and... She broke off. The door had opened onto an empty corridor.
That's strange, she muttered. Malinza peered past her.
What is?
The guard said they'd escort me out of here. Jaina stepped cautiously out of the cell, every nerve screaming trap. But there's no one, not even so much as a droid. Malinza joined her outside the cell.
It's Viram, she said. It has to be.
Who?
He's one of Freedom's core members, Malinza said. In fact, he's what you'd call the brains behind the group. If anyone could slice into the system and get me out of here, it would be him.
Tahiri moved through the canyon, tired and weary, every muscle in her body aching terribly. It felt as though she'd been running for years. A sudden howl and a cry reminded her that her pursuers weren't far behind. Across the vast and empty plain, she could make out nothing but varying degrees of darkness. There was no sign of the thing with her face, or the lizard creature. But they were out there somewhere. She knew that without a doubt. And if she ever stopped moving, stopped running, then they would catch up with her and... She pushed the thought down, turning back to the task of continuing through the darkness in search of the light. The howl of the lizard beast rang out through the spindly foliage. Its cry carried on a wind that rustled the dagger-like leaves hanging down from the trees around her. She moved faster, wincing as each leaf she brushed aside cut into her arms and hands.
Tahiri.
The voice came as a whisper on the breeze. It seemed far away, but not so far off that she could afford to relax. Sucking in her stomach and bringing her arms in close to her side, she managed to make herself small enough to be able to squeeze through the narrow opening, the mildew covering the rocks expediting her movement. The narrow crack widened around her. It had brought her safely out on the far side.
Tahiri.
Crying out in fright, she spun around to see the thing with her face glaring through the crevice in the mossy rock. Its arm was reaching out to her. Its bloodied fingers clawed for a touch of her sweat-soaked skin.
You can't leave me here, Tahiri.
Tahiri woke with a half-formed cry on her lips. Her hand was halfway to her lightsaber before she realized where she was. Bakura. She sighed in relief. It wasn't the world ship orbiting Merkur. She had had another of her terrifying, reoccurring dreams. The ones where she dreamt she was someone. Something else. She groped in the darkness for the light panel, relaxing as a yellow ambience filled the room. Feeling like she was still dreaming, she stood up and walked to the doorway. Opening it, she crept into the hallway, linking their suites. Unlike on Galantos, where they had five rooms, all opening onto a central common area, on Bakura, they occupied suites designed as though in a hotel. Han and Leia's was the largest, with an adjoining area that could be used as a common room. Tahiri and Jaina were up the hall, adjacent but not connecting. Tahiri stopped outside Jaina's room, pressing her ear against the door to listen. There was no sound whatsoever. Jaina must still be out on her mission, even though it was well past midnight. A distant concern for Jaina's well-being penetrated the fog, but not for long. Jaina was one of the ones who suspected her, who constantly watched her for any sign of... What? What was it Jaina searched for when she looked at Tahiri? The truth, perhaps, of who she really was? The thought hit her like a blow from behind. No! She performed a mental forward somersault, rolling with the punch and coming up fighting. That's not who I am! In her mind, she slashed at the thought with her lightsaber, cutting the notion to ribbons. You can't make me be someone I'm not! Then the terrible moment of clarity faded and the fog fell around her once again. She embraced the vague dream state, letting it dissolve her concerns and reduce her anxieties to just one. It had to stop. She didn't know how much more of this she could take before she snapped, or something altogether worse happened. She moved from Jaina's door, silently walking the short distance to Han and Leia's room. There she repeated the same process, pressing her ear against the door to listen for any movements. She couldn't hear anything. Keying the access code into the lock, Tahiri eased open the door. It surprised her that Leia's Nogri bodyguards were nowhere to be seen, but she didn't have time to dwell on it. From the darkness inside, C-3PO's glowing photoreceptor eyes turned toward her. She raised a finger to her lips. Not a word, 3PO, she whispered. C-3PO nodded uncertainly in the gloom as Tahiri continued through to Han and Leia's bedroom. They were asleep when she entered, their restful breathing the only sound. She stood there motionless, extending herself into the shadows, feeling for the thing that called to her. And there it was. She could feel it, pulling her ever closer. I must destroy the evidence, she breathed to herself. Destroy it! And the problem will go away. Using the force to guide her through the darkened bedroom, she made her way to a small table containing a bowl of flowers and a glass of water. There was something else there, too. Something that the force couldn't reveal to her. Now that she was closer, she could see it. The small object caught in a fine sliver of moonlight from the open window. And just as on Galantos, when she'd first found it, every one of her physical senses was tingling from the echoes emanating from the small pendant. She reached out with her hand to pick up the silver totem molded into the likeness of Yun Yamka, the Slayer. At the very moment her fingers touched it, A hand reached out of the blackness to grab her wrist, and a voice called out her name in a language that disgusted her. If the voice said anything else, she never heard it, as darkness suddenly swirled around her and swallowed her senses. Tahiri. She blinked, then looked around vaguely at her surroundings. Come on, kid, snap out of it. Han's voice was rough and hard, like the hand shaking her. She looked at him through tear-stained eyes and saw his worried and fatigued expression. Leia stepped between them, her gentle features smiling reassuringly at Tahiri. Are you okay, Tahiri? She asked. I'm awake, the girl mumbled hazily. She felt strange, confused, and this confusion was only magnified when she saw where she was, lying on the bed in Han and Leia's suite. What happened? She asked. Even as she spoke the words, she knew the answer. The same thing that happened before, on Galantos and elsewhere. The illusion of ignorance was her only defense. What am I doing here? You don't remember? Leia asked. Both of Anakin's parents were standing over her, dressed in their night robes. She started. I was looking for something. Leia held out the silver pendant. Its many tentacled, snarling visage seemed to mock her from its cradle of soft human flesh. You were looking for this, weren't you? Tahiri nodded, embarrassed. It calls to me. It reminds me of... She trailed off, unable to put what she was feeling into words. Of who you are? Leia suggested. The word seemed to stab a sharp pain in her mind, to which she responded with anger. I know who I am. I'm Tahiri Vela. What are you talking about, Leia? Han said, looking equal parts exasperated and tired. What exactly is going on here? Sometimes I think we forget what happened to her on Yavin 4, Han. Leia kept her warm, reassuring eyes on Tahiri as she spoke. Then she stood and addressed her husband fully. The Yuuzhan Vong did something terrible to her while she was in their hands, something we can't even begin to understand. They tried to turn her into something other than human. You don't just get over that easily. It takes time. Jaina told me what Jag found on Galantos. I was expecting Tahiri to come for it. That's why I instructed Cockmane and Meewal to stay out of sight, to let Tahiri come for the pendant. As she said this, Leia gestured off to one side, and for the first time, Tahiri noticed the princess's Nogri guard standing there. Han sighed. I still would have preferred it if you told me what was going on. There was no need, Han. I wanted to see what would happen. So what's causing this? He asked. You think it might be Anakin? Leia shook her head. It's more than that, much more. She's hiding something, from herself as well as everyone else. The accusation stabbed at Tahiri's heart, making her jump to her feet. How can you say that? She cried, taking a step forward. Han stepped over to her, then taking her hands. Hey, take it easy, kid. No one's accusing you of anything, Tahiri. Just relax, okay? She did so, feeling oddly calmed by the large man's rough but friendly voice. She saw Leia motion to her Nogri guard, who immediately released Tahiri and retreated to the shadows. Leia came forward. I'm sorry, Tahiri. I didn't mean to upset you. Do you have any idea what's been going on in your head these last couple of years? Sometimes I black out, Tahiri stammered awkwardly. I have these dreams that tell you you're somebody else, Leia offered. This brought her defenses up again. My name is Tahiri Vela. That's who I am. Leia took Tahiri's shoulders in her hands and looked the girl in the face with her penetrating brown eyes. I know this isn't easy, Tahiri, but you must try to understand. I want you to think back to just before you blacked out. Do you remember what I said to you? Tahiri thought about this. You called my name. Leia looked over to Han. What? Tahiri said, angered by the almost conspiratorial looks being exchanged between them. You did call my name. I heard you. Sympathy shimmered in Leia's eyes. I didn't call you by your name, Tahiri. I called you Raina. A feeling as cold as ice spread across Tahiri's shoulders and ran down her back in a horrible, clammy rush. At the same time, a terrible blackness rose up in her mind, threatening to engulf her. No, she mumbled, shaking her head slowly and fighting the feeling. That's not true. It is true, Tahiri. Before, when you blacked out, you were shouting at me in Yuuzhan Vong. You were calling me something that not even 3PO could understand. You weren't Tahiri then. She paused uncomfortably before pronouncing the terrible truth. You were Raina of Domain Quad, the personality that Mijan Quad tried to turn you into. Somehow, the Raina personality is still inside you. Tahiri shook her head again, more vigorously this time, wanting to deny the spreading darkness as much as the words themselves. It can't be true. It just can't be. It is, Tahiri, Leia said. Believe me. And the sooner you accept that, the sooner we can start doing... No! Tahiri screamed, in a pitch that surprised herself as much as it obviously did Leia, who took a step back at the outburst. As though a dam had burst, she was suddenly in motion, with the full strength of the Force flowing through her, fueled by her desperation and her need to escape. She snatched the pendant as she pushed past Leia and Han and headed for the door, too quick for even Cockmane to grab her. Then she was through the door and out of the suite, running as if her very life depended on it. Jag listened intently as Han and Leia detailed the incident with Tahiri over the secure subspace channel. She didn't hurt anyone, did she? Jag asked.
No,
Leia said.
And I don't believe she would have either.
So where is she now?
She ran off, Leia said. What bothers me, though, Jag, is that you and Jaina suspected something was wrong, and yet you kept it to yourselves.
Jag swallowed, wishing it were Jaina, not him, fielding the question. I'm sorry, but we really didn't expect anything like this to happen.
Well, it did,
Han said.
And if Leia hadn't suspected that something was up, things could have gotten quite ugly down here.
Well, again, I'm sorry. Where's Jaina? She was supposed to be looking out for Tahiri while you were all down on Bakura.
Jaina hasn't returned yet from interviewing Malinza Thanas,
Leia replied. If there was any concern for her daughter, the princess was hiding it well. Jag felt his fists clench at this news. An alarm sounded from the console, cutting off the last part of her sentence. Hang on a second, Jag said. I have another call coming through on a separate channel. He flipped a switch to hear the incoming message. Go ahead.
Colonel Fell, we have contacts emerging from hyperspace in Sector 11.
The voice belonged to Selwyn Markota, Pride of Salonia's second in command. How many?
30, with more on the way. At least 2 capital vessels so far. It looks like a fleet.
Have they contacted Bakura?
They're being hailed now. I'll patch you into the defense fleet net.
Flights A and B, Jag said on the twin sun frequencies. Stay here and mind the big bird. C, you're with me. He peeled out of formation and was followed by 2 X-Wings and a claw craft. The number of contacts now stood at 40, with still more coming.
This is Bakuran Defense Fleet,
called the local traffic control.
Please identify yourself and state your intentions.
The response came in the form of a warbling, dissonant fluting. The voice of C-3PO came over the comm.
The message says, I come in peace, people of Bakura, to consecrate this world and bond our 2 cultures in alliance.
Another voice spoke from Bakura in response to this. Jag recognized it as belonging to Prime Minister Kundertal.
We welcome the Kiramak to Bakura in the hope that this new friendship will bring prosperity and enlightenment to all.
Jag turned his interception flight into a sweeping exploratory cruise, examining the alien vessels with a critical eye. The Chiss had fought the Sea Rook on several occasions, contributing behind the scenes to the Imperium's retreat at the advance of the New Republic. He spotted two ovoid Chenier-class planetary assault carriers, accompanied by numerous Fuisen-class picket ships. It seemed an awful lot of hardware to accompany a diplomatic mission. But then he supposed the Puek were probably just as nervous of the Bakurans as the Bakurans were of them. At least they weren't shy about sharing their battle data, though. On the screen before him, names rapidly appeared next to all the major Puek vessels. The cruiser in the middle of the formation was called the Ferin Re, while the one lagging slightly behind was designated the Erinung Ka. He hung around the main chunk of the fleet long enough to follow security negotiations with the reception team on the ground, and to witness the launch of seven heavily armed Daki-class landing ships. The Kiramak was on its way. Jag only hoped that Bakura was ready for it.